Usually when we think about securing a building, we naturally think about the front door.
Right.
It's like you buy a massive deadbolt, maybe you install an alarm system with a glaring red light. It's highly visible, it's tangible. You lock it before you go to bed, and you basically assume the threat is safely outside.
Yeah, we rely really heavily on that binary state of mind, like locked or unlocked, secure or breached. It's a comforting way to view the world, honestly.
But when you step into the world of modern software architecture, that front door is increasingly becoming an illusion.
Exactly.
We're looking at a threat landscape today that is terrifyingly creative. I mean, the walls themselves are shifting, and the building materials are sometimes compromised before the foundation is even poured.
It really is a whole new paradigm.
So welcome to today's Cyber Morning's Daily Briefing. We are taking our stack of threat intelligence and doing a deep dive into the top three cybersecurity stories you need to know right now.
And our mission today is to look at this terrifying evolution in how attackers operate, right?
Exactly. We're going to start with a traditional, front door attack on a massive web platform. Then we'll transition into two massive supply chain attacks that bypass that front door entirely.
Yeah, they do that by going straight after the developers and the core code libraries themselves.
Right. And the progression of these three events provides a perfect, if somewhat chilling, encapsulation of where network defense actually needs to be focused today.
So true.
So let's unpack the immediate active threat that requires your attention right this second. It's a critical security flaw in Drupal core.
Yeah, and for context, Drupal is one of the most widely used content management systems on the internet. It powers massive enterprise and government websites.
Right, and currently, there's a SQL injection bug tracked as CVE-2026-9082 with a CVSS score of 6.5.
And the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, just added this to their known exploited vulnerabilities catalog.
Which is a big deal.
Huge. I mean, they only update that KEV catalog when there is concrete, verified evidence of active exploitation in the wild.
Exactly. And the timeline here is what really caught my attention. Drupal released fixes, and less than 48 hours later, the exploitation was already happening.
Yeah, 48 hours barely gives an IT department time to schedule a maintenance window, let alone, test the patch in a staging environment.
Right. And the patches cover a huge range of versions, from the current Drupal 11.3.3 all the way down to 10.4.4 day.
And if you're running older versions, like Drupal 9.5 or 8.9, you actually have to do manual patching.
Wow. Plus, for federal civilian executive branch agencies, CISA has mandated a hard deadline to apply these fixes by May 27th, 2026.
The telemetry from Imperva really highlights the scale of this race against the clock, too. They've detected over 15,000 attack attempts.
Wait, 15,000?
Yeah, and those attempts are targeting almost 6,000 individual sites across 65 different countries.
That is massive. They also noted that almost 50% of these attacks are laser-focused on gaming and financial services sites.
Which makes logical sense, considering those sectors hold incredibly lucrative user data and financial assets.
Mm, right. But looking at the current behavior of the attackers, Imperva noted that most of the observed activity right now appears to be probing.
Just probing.
Yeah. To use our earlier analogy, the attackers are basically walking down the street just jingling doorknobs across the entire internet.
That's a great way to put it.
They're specifically looking for exposed Drupal sites that are running vulnerable PostgreSQL-backed configurations.
And we should probably clarify why they are looking for PostgreSQL specifically.
Yeah.
Because not every Drupal installation uses the same database backend.
Right. Some use MySQL, some use SQLite.
Exactly. This specific vulnerability is tied to how Drupal's database abstraction API interacts with PostgreSQL configuration.
Okay, so how does that work?
Well, a database abstraction API is essentially a translator. Developers use it so they don't have to write raw, potentially unsafe database queries manually.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, the API sits between the application code and the actual database, ensuring that requests are formatted safely.
So it's supposed to act like the bouncer checking IDs at the door, basically making sure nobody sneaks in a weapon.
Exactly. But that bouncer has a blind spot. This SQL injection flaw allows an attacker to send specially crafted requests that confuse the translator.
Oh, wow.
And because of the nature of this specific API flaw, the situation can escalate instantly. It goes from simple reconnaissance, your jiggling doorknobs, straight to privilege escalation, data extraction, or even remote code execution.
Meaning they don't just see the doors unlocked. They bypass the bouncer and instantly own the entire building.
Precisely. They can drop malware or pull the entire user database.
So the practical takeaway for anyone managing these environments is vital. I mean, do not wait for the probing to become an extraction event. Patch immediately.
Yes, the window between a patch release and active exploitation is practically non-existent now. You just have to assume your servers are already being scanned.
Right, but you know, locking down your web server perfectly today means absolutely nothing if the code you're deploying is already poisoned before it even reaches the server.
Exactly, which is the perfect transition.
Yeah, that brings us to our second story, which looks at a massive escalation in tactics on GitHub. We're talking about a highly automated campaign that security researchers have dubbed Megalodon.
And the sheer scale of this operation requires a moment of reflection.
Seriously. In just a six-hour window, attackers pushed 5,718 malicious commits to 5,561 distinct GitHub repositories.
Pushing code to thousands of independent projects in 6 hours is industrial-scale compromise.
Pulling off something of that magnitude requires a really deep understanding of developer habits, right?
Right.
Plus a highly automated infrastructure.
Oh, absolutely. SafeDep published a really detailed analysis of the methodology. The attackers utilized throwaway GitHub accounts.
Like completely random accounts.
Yeah, we're looking at completely random 8-character usernames, just strings of text like KB8ELINR or LO6WT4T6.
But they masked those random names.
Right.
They used a fundamental Git configuration trick to forge the author identities.
Right.
If you just type a simple command in your terminal, like git config user.name, you can tell Git to label your commits with whatever name you want.
Is that easy?
Yeah. So the attackers made the commits look like they were coming from routine automated maintenance accounts. They used names like buildbot, autoc, cbot, or pipelinebot.
They also used 7 different commit messages that all mimicked standard continuous integration maintenance just to blend into the background noise of a busy software project.
And they pushed these forged commits using compromised personal access tokens, or PATs, and deploy keys.
Right. And once they had write access to a repository, they injected Base64 encoded bash payloads directly into the GitHub Actions workflow files.
Now, Base64 is essentially a way of taking raw code or data and converting it into a standard string of text, right?
Exactly. It prevents the malicious commands from breaking the formatting of the file. And it also hides the actual bash commands from simple security scanners that are just looking for keywords like curl or weget. So clever. And for those who might not live in GitHub every day, a GitHub action workflow is basically a set of automated instructions.
Think of it as the factory floor.
Right. When a developer pushes new code, the workflow might automatically spin up a server, test the code, build the application, and deploy it to production.
And by poisoning that workflow, the attacker's code runs with all the high-level privileges of that automated factory.
The ultimate goal of gaining that factory floor access is horrifying, honestly. The Base64 payload decodes itself, executes, and connects to a command and control server.
Specifically, an IP address ending in 216.126.225.129 on port 8443.
And from there, it just starts vacuuming up secrets from the build environment.
Yeah, the technical mechanics of how they are exfiltrating this data is fascinating. They aren't just grabbing hard-coded passwords. They are actively querying cloud metadata endpoints.
Like what? For example, they hit the AWS IMDS V2 endpoint. That's the instance metadata service. It's a local, non-routable IP address inside an AWS cloud environment that allows a running server to request temporary, highly privileged access tokens.
Wait, so because the attacker's code is running inside the trusted GitHub Action Runner, the cloud provider assumes it's a legitimate request.
Exactly. It assumes it's legit and just hands over the keys to the kingdom. They are pulling AWS credentials, Google Cloud Access tokens, and SSH private keys.
Wow.
They grab Docker configs, Kubernetes configs, Vault tokens, and Terraform credentials. They even scrape simple things like local.env files and shell histories. It is a total compromise of the infrastructure's keys.
And Megalodon is part of a broader, terrifying trend here. It follows closely on the heels of the Team PCP attacks.
Yeah, Team PCP is a threat group that has been systematically weaponizing the interlinked software supply chain, corrupting hundreds of open source tools.
They've compromised major projects at TanStack, Grafana Labs, OpenAI, Mistral AI, and now Microsoft-owned GitHub itself.
And the threat intelligence reports indicate Team PCP's motives extend beyond just financial extortion on forums like breach forums.
Right. Researchers observe them deploying wiper malware, specifically when their scripts detected infected machines located in Iran and Israel.
Exactly. And to be clear to you listening, we're just impartially relaying the facts from the source material here. We take absolutely no political sides, but that geographic targeting is documented as a technical fact in the threat intelligence.
It's important context. That dual-purpose nature, using the exact same supply chain vulnerability to either steal money or destroy targeted national infrastructure, is a sobering reality of modern cyber warfare.
It really is. And the fallout from the Team PCP attacks was so severe that it spawned a self-replicating worm called Mini Shai-Hulud.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It spreads by stealing credentials from one open source project and using those stolen keys to infect the next project, creating an exponential wave of compromise.
It got so bad that NPM, which is the massive package manager for the JavaScript ecosystem, had to take unprecedented action.
What do they do?
They permanently burned all granular access tokens that had write access and bypassed two-factor authentication.
Wow, burning those bypassed 2FA tokens is a drastic move.
It really is. It's essentially the digital equivalent of changing the locks on every single door in the city overnight because the thief fabricated a master key.
But as researchers at Socket noted, it cuts off the credentials the worm has already collected, right? It buys the maintainers a little breathing room to issue new secure tokens.
Yeah, it stops the immediate bleeding.
Yeah.
But it doesn't close the underlying vulnerability in how we trust these automated systems. The worm just goes right back to trying to harvest the newly issued tokens.
True.
Wait, looking at the SafeDep report on these Megalodon payloads, something doesn't really add up for me.
What's that?
Well, they mentioned two different payload variants. One is called SysDiag, which is a mass variant that adds a workflow triggered on every single push and pull request. It's entirely automatic.
Right.
But this other variant, Optimized Build, which they use to infect the Tiledesk server package, only activates on a workflow dispatch trigger.
Ah, yeah.
That means it requires a human developer to manually run the workflow on demand. Why would an attacker deliberately choose the manual option? Aren't they just crippling their own reach by hoping a developer clicks a button?
It seems counterintuitive at first, sure, until you look at it through the lens of modern operational security.
OPSEC, okay.
Yeah, threat actors are adapting to noisy security environments. Triggering a payload on every single code push certainly guarantees execution, but it also guarantees noise.
Makes sense.
It hits more targets, but it massively raises the chances of a developer noticing that their automated builds are suddenly taking 30 seconds longer or making weird external network calls to a strange IP address.
Oh, so the manual trigger is a deliberate stealth tactic to stay hidden in the background.
Exactly. Workflow dispatch sacrifices immediate blanket reach for long-term operational security. Think about the scale we discussed. They compromised over 5,500 repositories. Even if only a tiny fraction of those are manually triggered by a developer during routine maintenance, yielding a usable GitHub token, that still gives the attacker a massive scale for credential theft without raising immediate alarms across thousands of projects simultaneously.
They're playing a very patient long game.
They really are. And speaking of playing the long game with developer tools, there was a parallel attack on NPM right around the same time that relied heavily on social engineering.
Right, the Polymarket dev attack.
Mm.
A throwaway account published 9 fake packages impersonating Polymarket trading CLI tools within a 30-second window.
Yeah, packages with names like Polymarket Trading CLI, Polymarket Bot, and Polymarket iAgent.
And when a developer installed one of these packages, a post-install script would trigger. This is a script designed to run automatically the moment the package is downloaded to set up necessary files.
But in this case, it displayed a highly convincing fake wallet onboarding prompt right in the developer's terminal.
The audacity of that script is wild. It asked the developer to paste their Ethereum or Polygon private key, actually claiming on the screen that it stays encrypted.
Unbelievable.
And the terminal masking even hid the characters as they typed, making it look and feel like a secure password input field.
But underneath that false credibility, the script was simply taking the raw private key in plain text and sending an HTTP POST request to a Cloudflare worker at a malicious URL.
It was a fully functional trading CLI wrapped entirely around a credential theft operation.
Exactly. So Megalodon poisoned the factory floor, and the Polymarket attack targeted the individual worker.
Right. But our third story explores what happens when the raw materials arriving at the factory are toxic to begin with.
Yeah, this is where it gets really dark.
We are talking about the Laravel-Lang PHP packages. This represents a highly sophisticated supply chain attack that targets the foundational building blocks developers rely on.
For context, Laravel-Lang is a community-driven project that provides language translations for the massive Laravel PHP framework.
We're talking about packages like Laravel lang slash lang, HTTP statuses, attributes, and actions.
Right. And between May 22nd and May 23rd, 2026, researchers noticed something deeply alarming. Over 700 versions of these packages were published in rapid succession.
I mean, many of those versions appeared only seconds apart.
Exactly. And as researchers at Socket pointed out, this timing is a dead giveaway of an automated mass tagging or republishing event.
So the attacker didn't just guess a single developer's password.
No, the volume suggests they likely stole organization-level credentials or completely compromised the repository automation and release infrastructure itself.
Which allowed them to push tainted updates across hundreds of repositories simultaneously.
Yes. And the payload they embedded is incredibly insidious. The core malicious functionality is hidden inside a file named src/helpls.php.
Now, in the PHP ecosystem, developers use a configuration file called composer.json to manage their dependencies and tell the server which files need to be loaded, right?
Exactly. The attacker registered this infected helpers.php file under the autoload.files directive in that config.
And that specific technical choice is devastating.
It really is. By placing it in autoload.files, the backdoor executes automatically on every single PHP request handled by the compromised application.
Oh, wow. So it doesn't need a special trigger, it doesn't need a developer to run a manual workflow, and it doesn't wait for a specific URL to be visited.
Nope. If the web app is running and receiving traffic, the backdoor is running constantly in the background.
It's like a contractor building a house and hiding a microphone behind the drywall.
That's exactly what it's like.
Every single time someone walks into any room and flips a light switch, which represents the PHP request the microphone turns on, records everything in the house, mails the tape away, and then perfectly patches the drywall so no one ever knows it was there.
And the tape they are mailing away in this scenario is astonishingly comprehensive.
What are they grabbing?
First, the script generates a unique per-host marker. It creates an MD5 hash combining the directory path, the system architecture, and the system inode.
Wait, an inode is essentially the foundational permanent serial number of a file on a Linux file system, right?
Yes. The inclusion of the system inode is a particularly clever detail.
So by hashing the directory path and the inode together, they're basically carving out an unchangeable fingerprint for that exact server.
I assume this is so they don't accidentally run the payload twice and set off an alarm.
That is exactly the logic. Redundant executions create unnecessary network noise, and network noise gets you caught by endpoint detection and response tools.
Wow, that's smart.
It fingerprints the host, drops the payload once, and stays hidden. Furthermore, the payload is highly adaptable. According to Akito Security, it checks the environment it lands in.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if the server's running Windows, it drops a Visual Basic script launcher and runs it natively via script. If it detects Linux or macOS, it executes the payload via standard shell execution functions like exec. And what it steals is a complete catalog of a company's digital life. I mean, it's not a simple password grabber.
Not at all.
It is a 5,900-line PHP credential stealer organized into 15 specialized collector modules.
It queries cloud metadata for IAM roles and Google Cloud credentials. It steals Azure Access tokens, Kubernetes Service Account tokens, HashiCorp Vault tokens.
It even grabs authentication tokens for developer platforms like DigitalOcean, Heroku, and Vercel.
But it goes far beyond cloud infrastructure. It aggressively targets cryptocurrency assets.
Yeah, it hunts for seed phrases and wallet files for Electrum, Exodus, Ledger Live, Trezor, and browser extensions like MetaMask and Phantom.
It even goes after password managers, hunting for local vaults belonging to 1Password, Bitwarden, LastPass, and KeePass.
It pulls PuTTY save sessions, Git credentials, and VPN configurations for OpenVPN, NordVPN, and WireGuard.
But here is the technical detail that truly demonstrates the sophistication of this malware. It actively bypasses Chromium's app-bound encryption, or ABE.
Now, app-bound encryption is a recent major security feature introduced by Google for the Chromium browser engine, right?
Yeah, it cryptographically ties sensitive data, like saved cookies and passwords, to the physical machine in the specific application installation.
Okay.
It was designed specifically to stop off-the-shelf info-stealing malware from easily grabbing browser session data.
So how do they get around that?
To get around it, this PHP stealer drops a Base64 encoded embedded Windows executable designed specifically to bypass those ADE protections and rip the cookies right out of Chrome, Edge, and Brave.
Unbelievable. They are dropping compiled binaries just to defeat a browser's internal cryptography.
Yeah.
They steal the keys to the cloud, the keys to the crypto, the keys to the VTNs, and the session cookies needed to bypass two-factor authentication on web services.
And after it collects this massive hoard of data, it encrypts the entire package using AES 256, ensuring no network monitoring tools can read the stolen data in transit. It sends the encrypted payload to a server at flipboxstudio.info/exfil, and then deliberately deletes itself from the disk to destroy its own forensic evidence.
That is wild. This isn't just a database breach. It is an entire credential harvesting framework designed to map out and compromise a company's entire cloud and development infrastructure from a single infected language translation package.
It's breathtaking in its scope. It really is.
So let's summarize the clear practical takeaways from today's deep dive. Number one, patch your Drupal servers right now. The probing is already happening, and it will inevitably turn into extraction.
Number two, audit your GitHub actions and CI/CD secrets. Megalodon is out there hiding in routine commits, masking itself as standard automation bots.
And number three, scrutinize the automated updates of your trusted code dependencies. A 700 version update spike in Laravel Lang was the warning sign of a massive architectural compromise that bypasses your front door entirely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because knowledge is only valuable when it's actively applied to your defense posture. You need to look at your own infrastructure, and particularly your reliance on automated dependency updates, through this specific lens.
Which leads us to a final, provocative thought to leave you with today. We spend so much time and money building walls around our servers. We buy the giant deadbolt for the front door. But if the tools we use to build the software, the automated CI pipelines, the basic language libraries we import are fundamentally compromised from the source, well, where does the chain of trust actually begin?
That's the really question.
If the contractor building the house is the one deliberately hiding the microphone in the drywall, how do you verify the tools that verify your code?
Something to really think about.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay vigilant out there.